You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny but cold Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And we are also heard on the World Wide Web all over God's magnificent planet.
That's right, on WWBC, 1510WWBC.com. You can hit that listen live button. Get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, you can also hit the on-demand button and get us on download any of the shows from the past Mondays, the Mondays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Of course, we share all of that information on our social media channels, as well as our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
I swear, we're going to have a great show today, guys. We've had so many people that wanted this date. This was a very popular date, February 2nd. I actually had three people scheduled as well for next week, and I have to move one of them as well. It's good. People are reaching out to me to be a guest on a show, but I don't think what a lot of them understand is that in order to be on the show, we have to make sure that our station is compensated. And because of that, I have to thank our sponsors and my really good friends who come forward to help us with shows like The Joint Chiropractic, Cloud9 Sleep Shop, The Jot Goffs, and Dixie Crossroads, and then personal friends who call in to help us with the show. For folks who are tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here on Mondays and we talk to people right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak with people in the state of Florida and around the world, all 50 states. We talk about things like financial literacy. We talk about kitchen table topics. Some folks want to talk about writing a book, reading a book. Some folks want to talk about the weather, solar energy. They want to talk about their singing career, musical instruments that they play, which I do have somebody calling in from New York to talk about an Indo-Caribbean instrument called the tabla. He's going to call in March. And we try to give out valuable information in a very unscripted manner. And our show is very interesting. We have been on air for over, this is our 16th year, right?
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, we have people that come forward to sponsor our shows because community radio is important. And having a fair and balanced voice that comes from our soul and our heart to give back to the United States and our town here is great. And I think that's why we've been on air so long.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I have a really good lineup today, Ellen. I had three people for today, and I had to kind of cut and paste and fit, as you know.
You're so good at that.
Well, I try. God is good. He gives me the energy to do it. We've got my first guest is a gentleman calling in from Los Angeles, California. His name is Vipal. Munshi. He's a comedian from L.A., and he's going to discuss the importance of thinking outside the box and to foster creativity. And as you know, I'm Indian and Ahmed is Persian, and our children were told doctor, lawyer, engineer, business, dentist, pharmacist. But it's kind of nice when a parent or a child supports the arts, right? Our second segment, a recurring guest, CJ, who is a community activist in Minneapolis, will call in via phone to share his insights about what's going on there with the activism in a very peaceful manner and what people want out of all these protests and all that. And then lastly, the last 5 minutes of our show, I met this gentleman online. His name is CJ Millard, and his baby was born 6 weeks early with an amniotic band syndrome. And the baby's going for surgery tomorrow, and he would like us to just say a prayer for that baby. So we'll give him that last 5 minutes, right, guys?
Yes, absolutely.
And somebody could say something nice and maybe educate our listeners about what happens in the uterus. In pregnancy is not an easy thing. 9 months of real anxiety and worries. And you would think in today's world with so much technology that maybe they'll be able to fix the baby's face. It has a big gnash on it. So anyway, on the phone, our friend Vipal is there, and he's going to tell me how to pronounce his last name properly. Vipal, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hey, good morning from the West Coast. Good afternoon to y'all. It's thank you so much for the opportunity. So the name is pronounced Vipal, V-I-P-O-O-L, Vipal, and then the last name is Munshi.
Okay, so I got that right.
Yeah.
Vipal.
Munshi, I think, means accountant in Farsi, so I hope you would get that one right.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're usually really good with the Persian
Vipal
names.
Munshi.
You're really good.
Well, you know what? I saw you on TikTok, and I saw you on different social media, and I just thought, he reminds me so much of my own children, and I was a bit regretfully, I feel like I didn't support my kids when they wanted to do something in the arts, basically my son who lives in LA. I'll have to tell you about him off air, but tell us, you grew up and you said, I'm going to be a comedian, and did you tell your parents or did you tell your friends?
No, it was a decision that was subconsciously made through a friend of mine who was a comedian at the time. And I was looking for ways to explore who I was at such a young age and understanding, communicating through just simple, full sentences is one way, but not understanding who you are. I found myself at an open mic through a buddy of mine, Harvin, who is a comedian. And it was just extraordinary in understanding that it's a very rhetorical circumstance. And I found that being on stage was the only time where I was 100% able to be myself without having any guards up. And it's just been a journey since then.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? What I've noticed, too, is a lot of Asian kids and Indian kids, they use comedy sometimes to get a point across, to make a statement. Sometimes it's a hide pain or racism. Do you find that that comedy gave you a way to just deal with real life situations instead of overthinking everything?
Absolutely. I think comedy has given me the ability to see a perspective that has always existed, but I think most people refuse to see because they say it's not a laughing matter. And I think if you can laugh at something, you're able to see a side of it that necessarily can change the way you approach it. Even something small as marrying, like my wife is South Indian and I'm North Indian, and I do a joke on stage where I'm saying I'm in a bi racist relationship. And it's my mom, when she found out she was South Indian, traditional woman, she had her preconceived notions of certain things. And then with humor, she's able to see, like, first of all, your son married a lawyer, so kudos to you. Second of all, it's not that different, whether you're from India or you're from Pakistan or you're from the United States or you're from Iran. Like, it's just the color of the skin on top. Everybody essentially is going through the same thing at different times. Like, there's no difference. And through humor, I was able to kind of present that on stage and let people be vulnerable vicariously through me.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. At the end of the day, once you grow up and you know right from wrong, everybody understands that everybody wants to be loved and appreciated. And we're all just these spiritual beings that are just passing through planet Earth. And it's up to us to leave a good footprint behind, right? And if you could use your craft, whether you're a nurse or a physician or a musician or a comedian, to bring joy to other people, why not?
Yeah. I mean, there's no better way to say that. There is no wrong way to live, in my opinion. And I think through comedy and conversations with people like this, you're able to see that because I don't agree with how you do something, that doesn't make you any less of a human being. But I think the problem we have in society is that we want everybody to believe what we believe. And if you don't believe that, you're out. And I think today's climate in the world, we're seeing that. Doesn't matter the skin tone, doesn't matter where you grew up, doesn't matter how much money you have, the end result for all of us is exactly the same. And if we don't kind of respond or react with love, we're left with a lot of pain. And there's no more better time for a comedian right now than to be able to show that perspective on stage, in my opinion.
Yes. And so, you know, there's a difference being funny with your friends and being funny on stage. Because on stage, if you bomb, if a joke bombs, you have to be able to have a quick comeback, right?
Yeah.
Yes, and you can't feel sorry for yourself, not with a live audience, especially if you're, it's a lot, you have to be able to say, hey, this, I'm going to have to come back quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it's significantly more rhetorical on stage than it is when you're with your friends. And I think with any career choice you make, the more you do it, the easier it becomes to bomb or the easier it becomes to make the mistake because you lean into it a little more. And so it becomes a situation where you realize today's not my day, but I'm still on stage and I got to continue doing this set because I'm at work. And I think in the beginning it becomes, oh, I'm a comedian and I shouldn't have to be this or that. And so it becomes easier to be human.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find that it helps you to get out like awkward stuff and stress in some ways too? Because the audiences could be very unpredictable. They don't know what you're thinking when you're up there. But maybe there's something on your mind that you're trying to get out.
I think every audience member, as you're getting on stage, thinks the same thing is, he better be funny, and I can do the same thing he's doing. And it's just like going into a museum. Why is this on the wall? I can paint this. Any child can paint this. But essentially, you didn't paint it. And you're not on stage. And I think when I come off stage, they find themselves relatable to what I had to say, which is I also had to deal with that. My mom did want me to become this, and I did have to lie about this, and I do have kids, or I do have this. And so it's a sense of how can I feel like somebody that's talking to me directly without letting him know that I'm going through the same thing. And I think that's what I do.
Yeah. And do you find that there's a real pressure in a weird way of trying to be funny? Because, you know, Ellen and I were just saying, Ellen is the leader of a very, she has a band here in Brevard, and she's quite popular. She's booked for 3 years ahead of schedule, and she sings wonderfully. But she went to the grocery store recently, and someone saw her wearing her own T-shirt for her own band and came up to her and said, I like that woman, Ellen. She sings really well. That said, the person is talking to Ellen. And Ellen said, she says, do you know her? And Ellen says, yeah, I know her very well. I'll see her later. And then I said to her, I said, well, I had a nursing assistant that came up to me a few months ago. And she said, you look so familiar. You look like somebody I used to work with. So I said, who? And she said, a nurse named Sita. And I said, oh, really? She said, but she was a little bit skinnier than you are. And that's me. And I was like, you know, but I'm like, oh, yeah. I said, I think I know who she is, as a matter of fact.
That's so funny.
But you know what? That was kind of like, I wasn't trying to be funny, but it just came out like Ellen and I just had a good chuckle in the studio. So do you find that it's like a weird pressure sometimes when you're trying to bring out a joke?
I think in any circumstance, and obviously specifically about comedy, I think in any circumstance, sometimes we don't want to show up as the person we show up as most of the time, and whether it's a singer or a comedian. And so the pressure doesn't exist from, it's actually a very grateful feeling when someone says, hey, that joke you said was really funny, and they essentially want me to say it again. It tells me that I left a mark on them. But there's days where you walk out of the house and you're like, I don't want to sing, and I don't want to tell a joke, and I'm not in the mood to be funny. And so the days are the days I remind myself, like, it's not about you right now, that your job in life and your goal in life is to do this. And so if someone's asking for it, you should be privileged and lucky enough to say that somebody needs something from you that you can provide, and how that will have a ripple effect for the rest of their day or week. So it's not necessarily pressure, but it's more gratitude of an understanding that I have the ability to bring someone something.
So it's always a question for me too, is like I know how long it takes for me to put a set list together. How long does it take for you to write the, you know, like your monologue or your simple jokes or is it like just a day to day thing?
It doesn't take me that long to put everything together. I as boastful as it sounds, I think I'm naturally humorous, just what I do. I think the work that goes into play is making sure that day that I've eaten healthy, I've gotten my sleep, and I've worked out. And those are the things that lead to a good set on stage. And that's the part that sometimes takes a little bit of effort of, do I want to get up and go to the gym today? Do I want to go for a walk? Am I feeling lazy or what's going on?
And what about current events while we're, you know, while we're on that same do you wind up finding that current events is a plays a big part of your daily to-do list, if you will, to make sure that you're up on those things?
It does, you know, and that's a little thin ice right now, because depending on, I'm performing in a few states this month, and you have to realize is that you're going to be performing in people that have a lot of different beliefs, and some people don't believe what you believe, and even if they come off as right-leaning or left-leaning or liberal or moderate, whatever it might be, you're not there to offend anybody. So finding that sweet spot of finding the humor in a normally I would consider a horrific situation, and being able to make them feel like, hey, you're allowed to believe what you believe, but I'm just here to show you a light of a perspective that what I think.
Right. That's really great. Hey, this is Allie, just one of the other people that sit around here at the silly table. We have a good time. I was wondering if you, how you handle when everything goes to hell in a handbasket while you're at the, in the middle of a session or a performance, and
yeah,
then what?
I'll use that energy to try to get the audience back on my side. So I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, they just were not having it. They were at one point just staring directly at me. I was on stage for 20 minutes. I was maybe 6 minutes in.
Yeah.
And so I slowly started asking people what they did for a living, and I pretended to write it down in my hand and started asking people, you know, are you hiring? And just implying that this was the wrong career choice. And that essentially got them back on my side. And then I was able to take that same energy and start working my material back into it. So I think Robin Williams really said it beautifully years ago, and he said, if you just stop speaking and listen, your reactions are going to be extremely organic, and people will relate to that more than you trying to be something you're not.
Right. And you know what I noticed too is there's when a room full of people are laughing together, I would think for the comedian up on stage, that brings you a different kind of joy, because we all know that laughter is the best medicine. And I'm thinking, if you're on stage and you have a room full of people laughing at a joke that you just made or a set, you're thinking there, oh my God, I just reduced hypertension, their diabetes, I just helped them with their heart condition, I just helped this whole room full of people, and everything feels like it's going to be okay. Because there's a psychology behind being together in the same room with like-minded people.
Absolutely. And laughter is the best medicine, as long as you don't have a PPO, because then you can go to a real doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. You're absolutely correct. When you look at it with that perspective and that lens, you're able to understand that it's more than just a joke. It's helping somebody disconnect from whatever's going on in their personal life. Not that those problems go away when they leave the comedy club, but it's just a reminder that you're very temporary here, and those problems will also cease to exist as the good times do. So you just kind of have to balance that out.
So for our audience who are listening, we're speaking with Mr. Vipul Munshi, and he's calling in from LA. He is a comedian, and I have to say that you broke the mold, and I'm so proud of you. With the last 30 seconds left, tell us where we can find your comedy skits. What states are you in, and how someone can find you? Do you have a website, social media, and all that?
Yes, at Comedian Vipul M, on any of the social media sites. I will be performing. We're actually putting a tour together for the East Coast, so Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, up to New Jersey and New York, and those dates will be online in the next month or so. And comedy sketches all over the internet, you know, and I'm very grateful to be able to do what I do and opportunities like this to be able to put my name out there. And thank you so much for reaching out to me and giving me this opportunity. And I hope I can perform for you guys one day.
We do too. And, you know, I watch, there's other Indian comedians that I watch and they're brilliant. I must say comedy is brilliant. The way you guys deliver your sets, and sometimes it hits people right in the heart, right? And as an immigrant, there's a lot of immigrant jokes we could make, but it hits us right where we want it to go, right? We teach other people through jokes. Now, I've watched other comedians like Zana Garg, for example. She talks about her children and she makes fun of her mother-in-law, and she's quite funny. And some of the things she said is also political. Have you found in your comedy skits that you've had to show other Indian kids how wonderful it is to be a comedian? Because a lot of us, we don't. And so talk to the, take a little, like a half a second or so, and tell that Indian girl or boy out there who wants to be on stage, from your heart, what they should be doing.
I think everybody, be it brown, a white, Puerto, any color skin, specifically Indian in this situation, but I think they should all do improv, and I think they should all do an open mic and stand-up comedy. Not because you just want to become a comedian, but because it teaches you a social skill that will help you deal with the world in a way that you cannot learn at a desk or through a class, and gives you the ability to be vulnerable and the ability to have thick skin to understand rejection is just the opposite side of acceptance, and it's okay.
Yeah, and does a comedian have to use bad language to become famous? Because I was told once that a lot of them have to use profanities, but I notice a lot of people don't, and they're still doing quite well.
It's subjective. I think some people like the shock factor when you're on stage. If you see somebody that doesn't look like they curse a lot and they go on stage and they curse, it makes you laugh because they don't fit the picture. Just like when you see somebody with tattoos on their face and they're reading the Bible, you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. It's the same concept. It's a shock factor. Not all comedians have to curse, no. I think it just comes down to the audience you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for using humor to help people with everyday stresses of life. Because I can tell you, I've been following you and I see what you're doing and it's wonderful. And you do make me laugh as well. And I'm noticing more and more brown people are doing it. And it feels good. It feels good to see them.
Feels phenomenal. I'm, again, very grateful for the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody.
And we will share all of your information on our social medias as well as our website, cedamediainc.com. We're going to take this time to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Ceda and Friends right after these messages.
Thank you.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accountant.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right, on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on all the social media channels, as well as our website, sitamediainc.com. Of course, you can listen live on 1510wwbc.com. By hitting listen live button, you'll get us on any one of your streaming devices.
Yes, that was a robust, quick, a really good segment. You know, we always hear about people who are doing great things here in the United States, whether they're brown, whether they're black, whether they're white. They're just human beings that are doing the best they can, right? And he is married to an attorney. He has children. And he decided to take that route. And his comedy is quite fun because he uses everyday situation to make people laugh, right? Mm-hmm. And so, Ali, I don't know if you're watching what's going on in Minneapolis and elsewhere. Okay. And I am. And I'm hoping that we could have a good outcome here in the United States with immigration reform. You know, for so long, a lot of us activists, we wanted to have an overhaul of the immigration system because there are already checks and balances in place, and we want people to be held accountable, right? And so a lot of people are calling for the ICE to be abolished, but I don't think that's the right thing. I think that, you know, if there's people in place, they should be doing their jobs. I believe a lot of us are just concerned about how it's being done.
Right. Yes. And you know, going back to, this is an alley, but no. I'm jumping in, unfortunately. It's much like gun control and so forth. We have so many, you know, even the few weeks ago when we were speaking to the former lieutenant governor of Florida, we were speaking about gun laws and the fact that we have so many gun laws on the books already, but we're just not following them. Where, you know, we're missing the checks and balances of that. And I think in this specific instance with ICE and with immigration, I think that we've missed so many checks and balances, as you said, Sita, along the way. You know, you and I have had this discussion about immigration for a long time, and I was amazed at how long it took you for you to get sponsor some of your family from Trinidad to come to the United States and become United States citizens as well. And they're really, you know, we've been talking about it for 10 years at least before this crisis even came up, that there really needs to be a easier way to citizenship.
Well,
you know, a more specific way to citizenship, a more clearer path to citizenship.
Well, I think what it is there are a lot of immigrants here in the United States, whether they're legal or illegal. People pay taxes. You pay taxes when you buy stuff in the grocery store. You pay taxes where you work. A lot of these people have already applied for asylum, and they're waiting for their turn to become a lawful resident, not a citizen, but a resident. And it really, there's nothing wrong with deporting the people who are criminals. Everyone wants the criminals gone. But I think the way it's done, when it's a mom in a car in front of a school waiting on her children for an agent whose face is covered and, you know, wearing a mask and all that, going in the car and pulling the woman out. At the end of the day, there are reasons why people flee to the United States. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them is, you know, wars, violence, climate change, gangs. And I agree, in order to stop people from coming illegally into the United States or any country, we should help people in their own country through education and opportunities so they don't come illegally. Because in order to come here legally, you have to be sponsored by someone. Someone have to petition for you. But people who are running away with just the clothes on their back, with their children in their arms, and crossing borders and waters filled with God knows what in the water, they're not coming to take your house and your land and your job. They're coming for a better life.
Well, and we had something here locally. There's a we actually had a fundraiser last Friday for a family whose father was taken by ICE and is now in the prison in South Florida, or was in the prison in South Florida, and he was actually pardoned by Jimmy Carter. So they've lived in this country for the family has lived in this country for that long, and was recently taken within the last 7 months, was taken by ICE because technically he's not a U.S. citizen, and technically he was here, you know, without necessarily all of the correct paperwork. Right. But it was a Jimmy Carter, I mean, that's how long ago it was, pardon that was given to them. And unfortunately, and that family now is suffering,
well,
being challenged about going back to a country that they've never been in before.
Well, the bottom line is people need to come legally to the United
States.
Correct.
Right? No, I don't disagree. And, but in those types of cases, like you said,
yeah.
this is a guy that's been paying taxes. He owns a business. His family owns a business. And unfortunately was, you know, caught, if you will, in a situation that he thought that he was fine. He thought that he had the correct paperwork.
Well, here's the thing. If you came here with your parents and you were 1 year old,
right,
and your parents are here and they don't have their green card or their citizenship, if that child is now 18 years old or, say, 15, and you want to send a kid back, where are you going to send the child back? They grew up in the United States.
Right, exactly.
And people say, well, the sins of the father falls on the children. Okay, that's well and good. But where are you going to send the kid back? To which country? The parents are here. Now, we're all watching what's going on in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I have one of my good friends, CJ, who lives over there and is watching. And like me, everybody wants people to come legally. When I went to Turkey, Istanbul, Turkey, I couldn't wait to leave on my scheduled flight, because I live in the United States. My children live here. My grandchildren live here. I pay my taxes here. I love this country. When you take an oath to become a citizen of the United States, you are making a promise that you protect the United States. We do have laws on the books for immigration reform. Was it being enforced? Probably not. But the way it's being done is what people are concerned about. And I see Newt Gingrich just came out and said that we need to find a humane way for people who are living in the United States, undocumented, to become part of this society. Not just him. I think it's Senator Lawler said it as well. And the ex-Obama advisor warns the Democrats, this is Axelrod, he says, do not push for ICE to be abolished, that people believe you should come to the country legally. And I've always listened to David Axelrod. But on that note, I have my friend CJ, and I'm gonna let him jump in here and let him tell us a little bit about what's going on in his city, because these people are teachers, scientists, stay-at-home parents. They own businesses. They wait on tables. And they should not be in a situation where there's so much anxiety for themselves and their families. So, CJ, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're all watching what's going on, right? And as a person who has children and want to leave a better planet behind, and I know you do as well, what can we do going forward to help what your city here in Minneapolis? What started all of this?
Well, you know, that is an interesting question, and it kind of depends on who you want to ask. It does feel like this is, the current president being upset for either because he doesn't like our governor or because he lost the presidential election in Minnesota 3 times. Take your pick. There are 100, supposedly only, there's 130,000 undocumented individuals in Minnesota. We have 3,000 ICE agents here. You take the 1.7 million undocumented folks in Texas, 1.2 million in Florida, and the number of agents, in both those cities, and in both those states, much, much lower. And so, it does appear that this is about punishing states and cities that, you know, did not vote for the president.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? It's in a way, you know, we're all watching what's going on. And the whole idea behind these masked, heavily armed agents traveling in convoys in unmarked vehicles, it was supposed to be that they're coming for the people, the criminals. And we all agree with that. I don't care where you came from, if you're undocumented in the United States or even documented or legal citizen or citizen, if you committed a crime, you have to pay for it. But what we're watching is that the regular people on the street, they're scared because there have been instances of people being stopped who are just peacefully protesting or picking up a child from school or going to the store. And that feels, to some of us who are watching, it's downright scary.
It is very scary. I think what gets lost in how the story is told, especially when it, you know, outside of Minnesota, okay, is that people are being picked up not because they overstayed their visas,
yeah,
because they have a green card issue. There's a lot of talk about doing it. Folks should do it the right way. Most of the people who are being picked up did it the right way. They have their paperwork on them. They have their passports on them, okay? And they are still being picked up, denied due process, denied access to a lawyer, being sent to Texas, okay, without any way to contact the people that can help them. And when they are released, they're usually released in Texas, okay, and they have, you know, without their telephone, without a way, to get back. There literally is a separate section in the ICE facility, okay, in Minnesota for U.S. citizens. Okay, so U.S. citizens are being picked up. They're put in leg irons. And they sit in there from 8 to 12 hours, even though ICE knows they are citizens.
Yeah, it's almost as though they want to instill fear in the hearts and the soul and the mind of the people. Now, I agree as an activist myself. You know, we've tried to get people to understand about the human reproductive system, that a woman has a right to choose. And, you know, we did things like that back in my younger days, fighting for clean air and water and sunshine and all these things. But as an activist, it's very difficult because most activists, they have something that they believe in and they want to speak up for, and it's usually positive changes. And we try to make a difference. But, you know, right now, a lot of people are very quiet. They're afraid to initiate conversation or discussion. But this is the United States of America, where we can agree to disagree peacefully. But at the same time, people shouldn't be scared to stand up on the street and hold up a card. I mean, if you're interfering with the agents, I could see that. But it's just people peacefully protesting that are being accosted. And so what can we do as activists to tell other activists, you know, to protect themselves?
That's a great question. As far as protecting yourself, I mean, one of the things is to, you know, go out in pairs, make sure that you have you record thing. One of the things that the people of Minnesota have done a really great job of, okay, is that there are teams that they go out and they are recording everything, okay, because what's happening is that it's counterintuitive for a lot of people that who aren't here. You know, they're told all of these folks are just, you know, interfering with people trying to do their jobs. Why won't they, you know, just let us do our jobs? Okay, well, when you actually see the videos, okay, of everyday people, these are not paid protesters. Okay, these are not transferring the Democratic Party. Okay, when you see the tactics being used, okay, by these people, by these agents, and being recorded by everyday people, okay, you realize, that the overstep, that's happening here. One of the things I'm so proud of the people of Minnesota, everyone is doing what they can. Okay, not everyone feels they can go out and record. That's fine. Okay, folks are raising money. Okay, they're donating their time. They are walking kids home because ICE is circling schools. Okay, they are bringing food to their neighbors. And the great thing about this, this is not a Republican thing. This is not a Democrat thing.
Okay. Well, it's human beings, right? And it looks like many of the citizens in Minnesota, the good-hearted people, they're focused on positive, human-centered moments of solidarity. It looks like people. I saw where one an Indian restaurant was giving out samosas. I saw another one was giving out hot chocolate, not just in Minnesota, but all over the United States. People are coming together and they are saying to not just the immigration authority, the ICE mass men, that, we're all human beings just passing through planet Earth. Why not treat people in a humane way? It doesn't make any sense that a country would treat someone. Is that how you're going to treat a visitor in your home? You treat people the way you want to be treated, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And how do you see people balancing the urgent need for personal rest and their well-being at a time like this? Because people, a lot of us who are watching and a lot of you guys who are activists and actively live there, the anxiety level of the good citizens of Minneapolis and Minnesota, we could feel it right here in Florida as well. How do you protect your well-being?
Great question. And what it comes down to it is, we tell everybody, you need to take some time, step back. Okay, this is going to be a marathon, not a sprint. I think one of the things that helps, part of the untold story here, is that Minnesota has a record of wonderful activism. Okay, and yes, all the usual suspects when it comes to activism are participating, but it is the incredibly large number of people who have never been political, who've never written a letter to their local officials or their congressperson, okay, who are also participating, okay, in so many different ways that's making this work. We have essentially built an infrastructure in a couple, within a couple of weeks, to look out for each other, and it's a really wonderful thing to see, and it allows people to take a step back when they need to take a step back and then jump back in, when they're charged.
Yeah. And by no means are we advocating that the protesters should, throw stuff at the agents. I read where some was throwing snowballs and tried to block vehicles. And then the agents responded by shoving the protesters who got too close and firing pepper balls and tear gas and all that. I think the demonstrators, the protesters, have to know that their safety and the safety of the agents is at stake here. And now, watching the killing of Alex Preedy, I think everybody understands that there's a time and place for everything. And if you're out there protesting, not only do you have to protect yourself, but be careful, because our words and our actions does matter. And we're all watching, and we're sorry for what's happening, but we also want to protect everybody concerned. Now, what happened after the death of the nurse, Alex Preedy? Did you all see anything escalate right after that, or has it been an outpouring of love and support from the community for him and his family?
It has been an outpouring of love and support. And what I will say, you know, to your prior point, is like, 99% of all the protests, and there have been many protests throughout the entire state, okay, have been very nonviolent. No snow, no throwing snow, no doing anything, just protesting, yelling, a lot of yelling, okay. But you know, well within everyone's first, you know, amendment rights. After the killing of Alex, there, you know, vigils popped up spontaneously all across the state. Again, this wasn't something directed or led by, you know, local or state officials. These are just everyday people that just said, you know, we need to do something.
Yeah, it seems to us watching from afar that most of the activism is around unity and peace, and the people are just asking for their friends and their neighbors not to be stopped. And it's okay to ask someone if they're legally or illegally in the country, but when you're talking that people feel like they have to walk around with a passport, you know, like a lot of us, we're rushing around. Nobody wants to take their passport with them. We're going to get that lost, and then it's going to be a bigger problem to get it back.
Well, yes. I mean, and that's actually one of the things, that's part of the problems also, is that when people get detained and they're brought to, you know, the Whipple building, people get released and they don't get their paperwork back. Okay. So, you know, replacing some of that paperwork is really hard. You know, I carry my passport. All my family carries their passports. Okay, which, you know, is ridiculous. And again, we have video evidence and lots of it that even when people show they're they are legally allowed to be here, it doesn't matter. It just really depends on the mood of the agents. So, you know. You know, it truly seems to be not a bug in the system, but a feature. I mean, this is kind of where we are right now.
Right. And you know, I was listening to the news this morning, and they said that international students enrollment is down in the United States because of visa issues and visas being revoked and declined. But the truth of the matter is, if you come here as an international student at any one of our fine universities, and then if you don't end up staying in the United States and working for a huge company and paying taxes, then when you go back to your home country, because the United States was so wonderful and welcoming, and you go back to your own country, it's almost like soft power. You go back to your own country and you spread the goodwill of how people treated you in the United States. And it's always been like that if a person came to study and it didn't stay, then that's how we spread what great things we do in the U.S. And are you guys seeing a decline there as well in the universities and people coming internationally into Minnesota and Minneapolis?
Definitely. You know, because they don't know if they're going to be allowed to stay. They don't know. If they're going to, you know, be, you know, picked up, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, we've got kids that, I believe, it's a safe state, especially in most of the schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul. 20% of the kids just aren't coming to school, okay, because they are, you know, they're afraid that someone is going to pick them up, okay. You probably heard the story of little Liam Caneos Ramos.
Yes.
Okay, you know, 5-year-old kid. Okay, taken to Texas. Okay, and his father had applied for asylum. Okay, father did everything right. Okay, should never have been there. There had paperwork, had the attorney. Okay. Had a court order that said he should not be taken out of the state. They took him out of the state.
And he's a child. Okay. Can you imagine how he feels mentally? His mental health is probably shot at this point. He's 5 years old. And, you know,
and this is not a one-off. Okay. We've had 2-year-olds picked up. We had a 4-year-old picked up the other day. Okay. Not everything's making the news. Okay. And so I'm just trying to let people know these are things that are happening right now, in this state, and for no reason. You know, these aren't criminals. Their parents aren't criminals. They haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah. Okay? It looks like it's a lot of discrimination, harassment, and hardships. And hopefully, these are experiences that these children would grow up with too.
I hope that they have the opportunity to to grow, and make it through this.
Well, we were watching here in Florida where we saw a group of activists in Minneapolis. They rapidly organized and they started making food deliveries to people's houses. The volunteers were volunteering to take children to school. They were volunteering to walk with the people on the street. And I think that is so commendable because at the end of the day, as we pass through planet Earth, I think that is our inherent right to leave the planet a better place than we found it. And by doing all these things, CJ, you all and the great activists there who are peaceful people protesting the treatment of human beings in your cities and in your town, I think you all need to be commended. Is there anything that we should be doing here from Florida or any person across the world that's watching? What do we tell other people about what's happening there to make the world a better place?
Okay. Well, a couple of things. One, I would say, I need folks to, start, connecting with, folks on the ground, local, especially local folks, so you can actually hear what's going on. If you're in a place where you're able to help financially, I'd suggest folks go to standwithminnesota.com. Okay, it has a list of a wonderful list of organizations that are doing the good work to help people, whether it's legal help, whether it's getting food, helping people pay their rent, okay, any number of things. You're going to find something there that can be that can be helpful. And then the last thing is just frankly, you hear something, verify it. When it comes to me, if I have a visceral reaction to something and I'm seeing it online, whether it's positive or negative, okay, I take a step back, okay, and I get some independent sourcing, okay?
In other words, think before you speak, too, because a lot of time people just off-the-cuff say things, right?
And there's so much AI and all this stuff that's out there and people really trying to either make it worse or trying to make it better, and it's actually not even real. So, so we really have to your point, we really have to be careful in making sure we investigate everything. And if it doesn't make sense, ask better questions.
And thank you for being a great activist, CJ. We appreciate you taking the time to call in. And I guess our segment ends with you. We should just tell people, be kind, be humane, even if somebody don't look like you and act like you. And come from your city, just be kind.
That's right. And thanks again for that, for the great insight. And what was the website again?
It's standwithminnesota.com.
Thank you, CJ, so much for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Sita, I believe we have another caller calling in, correct?
Yeah, well, talking about being kind and nice, we've had so many people that wanted a segment today. And I met this wonderful guy that he needs a lot of prayers for his little one who was born with a condition, an amniotic band syndrome. And he had asked me if our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends would take the time to say a prayer with him for the little one, and he was going to call in. So
a little bit about amniotic band syndrome. It's a condition where the bands of the tissue in the uterus wrap around a developing fetus and restrict the blood flow. So ABS can also cause a variety of congenital disorders, ranging from missing limbs to undeveloped organs. And in this case, you got a picture of this gentleman's little boy, right? Little one that has a gash basically on his face because the cord got wrapped around, apparently around their face. And he is supposed to be getting surgery tomorrow. And again, this all happens during pregnancy and not necessarily detectable prior to birth.
Right. And so the young man, his wife, his name is TJ Millard. And I'm not sure if he got the right number to call in or not. But, you know, we could all say a prayer for this baby. He is on TikTok with the baby all the time, showing stuff that's going on with him. And, you know, I thought if he called in, we would say a prayer with him for the child. We'll call and see if he's picking up for us. He does work at Walmart full time. And my whole concern was whether or not he had health insurance. Right. As you know, with our country. Hey, TJ, we've got you on the phone. We're gonna put you on speaker. So tell us a little bit really quick. We got 4 minutes left and you're on air live. What's going on with the baby?
So Shiloh was born with amniotic band syndrome. He has basically a big cleft that goes almost up to his ear on the side of his cheek. So his face and mouth are pretty open. He's actually got surgery tomorrow for them to start closing up the first part. You can see where the band kind of went around his head and it got the other side of his ear. So tomorrow they're going to start closing up on the bottom part of his lip and hopefully start maybe on the side. It's going to be a long, scary process, it seems like, but yeah, it's all going to be worth it. So,
well, you know, I was praying for you and we all said a prayer for you before we started the show today. I'm so grateful that you have health insurance for this baby as well, but it looks like you had a little bit of a trouble there because when your baby came home from the hospital, you had an issue where you lived and you had to move in with your parents as well.
Yeah, we're hoping, I actually just got my W-2 yesterday, so hopefully after surgery and after he's healed up, I'll be able to get that and we'll be able to get out of my parents' house and have our own space again because it's been hard with the trying to squeeze everybody in over here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we want you to call back after little Shiloh's surgery, but in the meantime, can you give us the GoFundMe for the baby in case any one of our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends would like to donate? Because you're going to need a lot of support, my friend.
Oh yeah, for sure. If you type in Shiloh surgery, my name comes up. My name's I don't know if it comes up as TJ or Theodore, but it'll come up on there and it'll show a picture of him with his, you can see the cleft on the side.
Yeah. And you know, you're doing us a favor by teaching our audience and educating them about this disorder with the amniotic band syndrome. So thank you so very much. We will keep in touch with you and we will call you or you will call us back after the surgery of little Shiloh.
Yes. And prayers.
God bless, and we are praying for you all.
Yes, and we're praying for all of us. We're praying for our nation. We're praying for all of the people that are feeling called to be activists in our great nation that we have, our freedom of speech and our ability to be able to protest things that are good and challenging, certainly in our country. Thanks again for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 1510 WWBC.